welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who is currently making s'mores with white chocolate and drinking a 20-ounce coffee. It's Chris Kelly.
Hey, everybody. Actually, it's 80 marshmallows and a white chocolate coffee.
Oh, got it. Wow.
Yeah, it's... Well, you know, the way I look at it is if you're going to go camping, you got to go camping. And you can't go things halfway. And
so you're putting 80 marshmallows inside of one coffee?
Yeah, it cuts out the caffeine, but it really increases the sugar rush. In my opinion, the sugar rush lasts longer than the caffeine buzz. So if you're going to do it, then you might as well just do that.
You need some Ambien. Yeah. Can I tell you something weird, Chris Kelly?
Well, now that we're on the talks of Ambien and marshmallows, go ahead.
So I just want to say real quick. So if you've been listening to this podcast, Chris has been a guest on it for the last couple of years, been on many episodes that are wonderful. People love the Bowfinger episode. People keep going back to the Bowfinger. That's one of our more popular episodes, actually, and it keeps popping up all over the place. So of that one. But Chris, I've known Chris for years, and I call him Chris Kelly. And one time I was talking to my wife, and I'm like, yeah, I'm recording with Chris. And my wife goes, who? I'm Chris Kelly. She goes, oh, okay. And this morning, I was like, yeah, I'm recording with Kelly. And Megan goes, who? I'm like, Chris Kelly. She's like, oh, okay. So when I say Chris or when I say Kelly, no one knows who you are. But I'm like, Chris Kelly. They're like, got it. I thought it was so funny. Yeah, I got Kelly on the podcast today. Who? Chris Kelly. Ah.
Oh, you got a new person on your show. Cool. Yep. Oh, no, Chris Kelly.
No, Chris
same
Kelly.
Old guy.
Son of a... same old son of a bee. And the weird thing is so... When this movie came out, I was living in late 2008. I was living in Korea. And for some reason, I feel like I saw this movie in the United States in the theaters, but I didn't. So I have no clue when I watched this movie for the first time. I just had to let you know that, Chris Kelly.
I really don't remember whenever I first saw this either. I just remember that it came out around that time whenever all the improv comedy movies were just one right after the other. And to be quite honest, although there was a ton of them, they were all pretty good. I can't really think of one that was lesser than the other ones, but they were all very unique, but they all still had that same improv of comedy. And what I liked most about it was that they were all very different, although they all relied very much on the same kind of basis. It's like, you know, first we have a group of teenagers that are throwing a party, improv it all. And then it's like, let's have two grown adults that are, you know, mess ups their entire lives and they are doing a meaningless job, but they have to be role models. Go at it. And they're both equally as funny.
And then you have unhappy guys who are, they have like beautiful girlfriends and fiancés and wives, but they're unhappy. But then at the end, they're like, oh, hey, my life's not that bad.
Just like that podcast that we did.
Yeah. But this movie, though, there's a review from Ebert, which I like. And Ebert says, Role Models is the kind of movie you don't see every day. A comedy that is funny, the kind of comedy where funny people say funny things in funny situations, not the kind of comedy that whacks you with manic shocks to force an audible Pavlovian response. And I think my favorite part of this movie is just some of the banter between Sean William Scott, Paul Rudd, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, Bobby J. Thompson. I mean, Jane Lynch is Sweeney in this movie. She's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's dynamite. And originally, she was supposed to be played by a male character. But after auditioning everybody and the director, David Wayne, he really loved Jane Lynch and just thought that, you know what, it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. We're going to have Jane Lynch.
my favorite moment when she's talking to the two characters and she's like, all right, Mr. Bullshit and Dr. Fullshit. He's like, well, which one of us is which? And I could just watch the three of them in a room talking all day. And I mean, and listen, since it was 2008, this movie does have some very, antiquated dialogue right now. And David Wade in the commentary, he even said that he's like, yeah, I wrote too many. He's like, I threw in too many, I guess, in his words, he's like, I had too many gay jokes. He's like, I wish I didn't do that. Because this is pretty much chock full of it. And that Louis C.K. says, like, a real, I don't know. Yeah. There's some lines in here that great feel like a cheese grater against your ears now in 2020. I mean, in 2008, that was the norm. I mean, look at The Hangover and all that. And I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying that's the way the movies were. But you kind of, but other than that, though, I mean, this movie sort of drops that in the second half. In the first half, it's kind of vulgar. But then it moves towards the reconciliation between all the characters, and it becomes really sweet.
Yeah, and the kids equally add to the comedy, especially Bobby.
Yeah.
That kid.
Oh, he's
man.
so good.
I like what David Wayne said in the commentary, saying that if Bobby J. Thompson was not available, he doesn't know who would have played that kid, because he said in the auditioning, he watched the tape of Bobby performing, and he was just blown away with him. And he thought, well, maybe he's just kind of a reserved kid and he just has this great act. And when they brought him in, it said that he just, as soon as Bobby entered the room, he owned the room and he engaged everybody and everyone loved him. And he said, that's my Ronnie. Yeah.
He is so good. And I hate saying this a lot in movies. His character is a force of nature, but he does own the screen when he's on it. And he's very natural too. I remember watching this. Wait, I don't remember watching it for the first time. But I remember realizing one time that this kid is good. This kid's funny. And so is Christopher Mintz-Plasse. I mean, he was in Superbad, and David Wayne, you listen to the commentary, obviously, he kind of was worried about him because he's like, am I getting McLovin? Was he McLovin playing McLovin? But then he realized, oh, this kid's a good actor. And he has a warmth in this movie as well, which I dug.
Yeah, I liked how you could see him as Augie, and you can also see him as McLovin, that he really is a good actor where he can separate the two. Although it is just, you know, he can't help having the lisp, obviously, but it's just... He's such a good actor that he can be both characters, and he's very believable, both of them. And I just love his character of Augie as being so, you know, he's almost kind of ashamed that he's not like everyone else. But at the end of it, he becomes proud that he isn't like everyone else, which is awesome. I love
that. And I think one of my favorite parts at the end, and I think it was part of, because they did a reshoot 6 months after this movie because the writer's strike kicked it. Like, you know, it Paul Rudd, there's a scene where Paul Rudd hit Sean William Scott in the nuts with a sword, and he really did it. That's what the writer's strike did to this film. I mean, they were...
There's also the scene where they're at the campfire, whenever Paul Rudd and Christopher Mintz-Plasse are sitting at the campfire, and Christopher playing Augie, Hans says, oh no, you know, I'm making this patch, and he's like, well, give her your patch, you know, that girl your patch, so that way she knows that, you know, you like her. And he says, I can't, because I'm making it for you. That whole interaction was right during the writer strike, because they weren't allowed to have any writers, so they needed to shoot something. And David said, we just put the two cameras down, let them go.
I like when Paul Rudd said, solo, dude. I like that. That really worked. But at the end, there's a scene where what Augie's parents, are mom and stepdad, are talking to him, and they try to be nice. And it doesn't succeed, but they're nice. Like, oh, you got second place, but still, like, a girl beat you. And then I like when Augie just goes, thank you for trying to be nice. Like, he understood that he could have gotten mad and ran away, but I think he understood that his parents tried, or his, you know, his parental unit tried at that moment. So it could have been really bratty, but it turned into a nice little moment where he kind of recognized that his parents were trying, but they failed.
Yeah, all around, it just seemed like a great little experience for everybody. I just liked how everything was kind of... In a good little package, I guess you could say.
And so I guess we should talk about the plot, right? So this.
Yeah, I mean, the plot being that the two main characters played by Sean William Scott, which Sean William Scott, I like how he started out as Stifler in the American Pie movies, and then he kind of kept the same character, but at the same time he played drastically different versions of Stifler. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
It's like we're watching Wheeler. But it's like if Stifler had actually grown up and been through some serious stuff. It's the same thing with the rundown that he did a few years prior. It's just, I just think it's really neat how he's done that throughout his whole career.
I think that's highlighted with Goon. I think that's his best performance, because he's not a Stifler one in that. But I think he's able to turn it around. Have you watched Goon?
Sadly, I have not. And I know you've been telling me to watch it for a couple of years now, but I will get around to it. I swear to God.
I mean... He's good. What I think he excels at is being a, like, stereotypical jerk. I mean, an intro to him, he makes Paul Rudd smell his fingers, which is a horrible introduction. But then you get to know him, and he's just a nice, earnest dude. But he's, I mean, he says some very 2008 lines in this movie. But you kind of like the guy, despite him being that character, I think, is what it is. I think he's more stable than Paul Rudd. He's almost more professional than Paul Rudd, too, in regards.
I think the character of Wheeler is that he understands what his path is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whereas with Danny, he has no idea. And we find that out later on whenever he has his meltdown, which is fantastic when he's giving that speech in front of the kids. And David Wayne has said that they shot that speech at three different points during the production of the movie, where they did it in the beginning, the middle, the end, because they wanted to see how Paul Rudd actually felt about his character of Danny, because that way he could add more to that speech. He doesn't really like what he's doing. He doesn't like being a spokesman of the energy drink Minotaur, which is supposed to be, you know, obviously a knockoff of Monster. And of course, all of us who were around or Red Bull. I mean, that's obviously what that truck is supposed to be, is one of those Red Bull cars, which any of us who knows, who was around in college or in high school around the mid 2000s knows that you saw these vehicles quite literally everywhere. I remember seeing them all the time when I was at Penn State, but
they were like ice cream trucks for college students.
They were, but they were free. They were like free ice cream. It's like if you had an ice cream truck and you offered free ice cream, and every day you just went down to whatever neighborhood and handed out free ice cream. It's like, that's exactly what happened with these things. I remember whenever we would be studying or whatever at college, and you would see one of these vehicles pull up, it was like a beeline. saw people lining up to take the free energy drink.
Do you drink energy drinks, Kelly? Chris Kelly?
No, I used to, but I found that they had too much. It was too much caffeine for me. It was just too much, and I couldn't handle it. I was getting like shaky, so I switched to coffee. And I've always drank coffee, but that, you know what? That was probably the problem, to be honest with you. I was drinking coffee and energy drinks.
Oh man, you're a madman, Chris Kelly.
I haven't slept since 2012.
Oh man, I'm tired. But am I? I should be tired, right? I should be tired. I don't know. But I stopped drinking. So I hate sounding pretentious, but when I went to Korea, I didn't really do, like, I didn't, I stayed away from all the fast food, and I stayed away from everything, just kind of ate out there, like the healthiest I could find. And I didn't have an energy drink for a year. So when I came back to the States, I just thought, you know what? I haven't had a Red Bull in forever. I'm kind of jet lagged. I'm going to grab a Red Bull at the airport. It was like $6. So that was annoying, but I drank it. And I swear to you, dude, I thought I was going to have a heart attack. Not like a literal heart attack, but you know, just you drink it and it just hits you and you're just thinking, holy mackerel, this is not good. I was used to this. So that's when I stopped. But I kind of loved their scenes where like $6 of jet fuel and they're pissing green and it's
shark's piss.
Yeah, that's what it was. But the beginning does a good job of just making Paul Rudd the most unlikable human being possible. Which I kind of love.
Yeah. I think that, like, everybody who, I mean, his character is supposed to be 35. He's supposed to be not sure of what he wants to do with his life, which everybody has that moment in their life. But he just does not like where his path is headed at all. And his way of fixing it is to, with his vastly more successful girlfriend, played wonderfully by Elizabeth Banks. I love her character. I really wish, just like what David Wayne said, I wish they could have put more of her in it.
Oh, yeah.
she was a great character that they really should have added more to. His great plan is to marry her, and she immediately recognizes this as being a bad idea, so she says no. And I love how she's talking to her next client. The guy's like, that's not me. That's stealing this. I don't know what you're talking about. And they play the video, and he's like, I can't believe it's me. And he says his name, stealing everything, and no one will catch me.
I love that character. And I think that's a testament to what David Wayne said on the commentary. He just said he brings in the best for one day so he doesn't have to worry about anything.
And he wants
people to rock their one line. I love that character, though. That's not me. No. And he says his name could be anyone. And then he makes He makes that great point about marriage.
Yeah. And he's like, well, you marry me. And he turns around and he's like, oh, mazel tov. And she's like, we're not getting married. Wait, what? And then he's like, you get married to, what is it he says? You get to marry, you marry the person that you want to be with for the rest of your life, regardless of like how successful they are or something around those lines. And she's like, you know what? Why don't you shut up? It's like, he's absolutely correct.
And she was working on another project, correct? And that's why she couldn't be on this film more. I know she was bouncing around during this time between job to job, and she couldn't be on it more. I think that's why she wasn't in it more.
She doing The Hunger Games? ?
I don't think that was post-2010. We can pull it up during the break, but he said something. Oh, no,
she was doing Zach and Miri.
That's what it was. Yeah, you're right. And so he said
2008 was actually a really big year for her. She had several projects going on at the same time. She's had about 7 or 8 different projects all in the same year.
Jeez Louise.
That was a big year for her.
Holy she needed Minotaur. I do love that coffee scene. I think when I knew I kind of loved the movie when he's complaining about venti. And then she's like, venti is 20. It's 20 ounces. And
that's why it's called venti.
And you just watch Paul Rudd deflate. He was a balloon that was pop. And he just was like, oh my gosh. Oh man, I love that scene. And that's, I think that showed him well. Like, he wasn't even trying anymore. He was just complaining.
And I think his character kind of just, he was at that point where he was just too comfortable with his girlfriend, Beth. And she was like, look, your life is not going anywhere. You have no desire to go anywhere. You're okay with where it is right now. And that's it. And she's like, I cannot deal with this anymore. So she leaves, which is, you know, good. And
she leaves in the crock pot because he likes chili.
Yeah, to be honest, yeah, you know, I'm a chili man myself. As my girlfriend that I co-host my podcast with, Classic American Movies, will tell you, I am a frequent chili man.
And you have a shirt on set that you used to wear, and you used to go scooping around the crafty areas, and you used to go, when we had lunch, you'd be like digging through the chili.
Well, actually, man, I think you're misremembering. I had a hat with a clock on it. And it said, time for chili. And I'd say, hey, Mark, what time is it?
It's time for chili.
It's time for chili, Chris. Yeah. What time is it? It's time for chili, Chris. I get it.
Remember that one time you came in on a set with a big ceramic bowl and just a ladle, and you were just scooping chili in your mouth in the middle of getting 100 extras ready. No one knew what you were saying because you were eating chili the whole time.
I had chili on one side, coffee on the other, and I was ready to go. I was full of beans and full of caffeine.
That's become a thing of legend. You got 100 extras ready in 13 minutes.
That's why they call me Beans and Caffeine Kelly. It's the
Beans and Caffeine Kelly. Beans and Caffeine Kelly. Chris Kelly. Who's that?
And then I come in on my Minotaur.
See, I called you Chris Coffee and Beans Kelly.
Yeah. See, but see, that's third. Where you got it wrong, was it was Beans and Coffee. Coffee and Beans, that was the other guy. See, that's...
Oh, because I could be saying coffee beans, not coffee and beans.
See, there you go. That's why people were confused, Mark. I mean, it's just common sense.
How many beans do you put in your chili?
I'd say about 237.
Wow.
And
different
variations?
Do you use two or three different types?
Oh, well, that's just ridiculous. Of course you do. I mean, you got to have your pinto beans, you got to have your kidney beans, and you got to have your red beans.
What about black beans?
That depends. Sometimes, because they'll add a little bit more of a different taste to your chili. So I'll do that only if I want to leave out some pinto beans or kidney beans.
What about jelly beans?
That's more of a pizza thing.
Do you put lima beans in stew?
That's if I have celery.
That's a good point.
See? Because you got to balance the acidity with the fiber. If you don't, then you're in the whole world of more tomatoes, less tomatoes, canned tomatoes, or fresh tomatoes. Always.
Yeah. What about baked beans?
Baked beans? Baked beans, I'm not really big fond of putting into chili because they liquefy, and then that just makes your chili just a little bit more harder. I prefer to just put a little bit of flour in my chili.
Chris Kelly, someone comes up to you and says, I will give you $5,000 to do a bean and coffee blend, and you have to drink it in front of us. Which bean and which coffee would you mix together for $5,000?
It's going to be a dark roast mixed with kidney beans.
How come?
Because that would add a little layer. It would take away the acidity from the coffee and pat it for a little bit of a smoother taste. So it'd be almost like similar to getting a medium roast, but you would just kind of, it'd be a harder way and more impractical way to create a medium roast.
What kind of cup would you drink it out of?
Well, I use my Panavision cup that I got from working on set or my Hank Williams Jr. cup.
You know, I did a job one time. It was like 18-hour days. It was a pilot. 18-hour days just for like 3 weeks. And then they gave me a water bottle that didn't even have the anything on it. And here's your rap gift, and they handed me a water bottle. And
you think that's bad? I got, as a rap gift one time, I got a towel from Walmart.
Whoa. Now, here's the thing. I wasn't expecting a rap gift, so if they gave me nothing, it's a pilot. You don't really get a rap gift. But the fact that they just thought, we need to give him something, so yeah, give him a water bottle. And I just went, just give me nothing. It's a pilot. Like, it's fine. This isn't a six-month Marvel job where you get a jacket. This is, or a sweater. This is a pilot. I don't want to. Okay, cool.
To be honest, just recently I got rid of a bunch of water bottles that I've collected over the years of working on set. Because as anybody will tell you that works in film, you'll get a water bottle almost on every production that you work on. So I had I had an entire cupboard in my condo dedicated to these water bottles. And I was like, I only use maybe like three of these, because I'll use one in the summertime that's has a metal lining. And then I'll use the regular plastic one during the cooler months.
That's, so that's like, a lot of Chris Kelly. Last time I saw you, you had a water bottle thing around your waist and you had all the names of the movies painted out. Like, so when people run, they put those little water bottles. You had them all around you and you were holding two to make sure everyone sees the label. You had a movie hat. You had a movie shirt that you got, and then you had a jacket on, too. And you were holding call sheets.
And your shoes said...
You had the Hunger Games hat with the gotcha that was on it. You were wearing those, and you're like, oh, funny you ask. I worked on this movie, guys.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if it was obvious or not, but I work on film sets.
I wasn't fishing. Chris Kelly lying on the MFF podcast. What do you think they do? What do you think the rap gift on Role Model?
They probably got a Minotaur.
A real one?
I think they probably did. Yeah. My guess is they definitely had a hat. Hats? They probably definitely got a hat.
Oh, yeah. That said rub-a-dub-dub.
You know what's interesting about that line? That line said by the wonderful Joe Lotrulio playing Kuzik.
Kuzik. Huzzah!
If anyone gets a chance to watch the DVD or the Blu-ray, I strongly recommend checking out the special features, especially the fake stories, their fake interviews that they give with the characters. And Joe Lotrulio gives quite possibly the funniest performance I've ever seen as Kuzik. And he talks about this so much because they introduce him like, and you're Kuzik? And he goes, it's Kuzik. He goes on about his character for like 5 minutes. And he is one of the greatest improv people, I think, in modern times. His character in this movie almost was all 100% improv. And his line, it said on IMDb that there was an improv line that almost that made Paul Rudd pee himself. And in the bloopers, you get to see that it's whenever Joe Lotrulio, he said one of his bajillion lines that were improv. He just goes rub-a-dub. It's so hysterical. And all of his lines are, not all of them, but the majority of them are improv. It's just David Wayne said that he wanted to just make sure he had an idea of what to say. And then he left everything up to Joe. And he was phenomenal. Like, he told him that scene where they're walking through while everybody's practicing battle, said that they just put a camera on him and said for 10 minutes, just say whatever. And it's all gold.
It's all solid gold. And Paul Rudd even said he peed. He's like, I peed. So that's that's not even conjecture on the thing. Paul Rudd, he was dying laughing. He looked unhealthy because of rub-a-dub-dub.
He just tried to do his line, and he's like, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I can't do it. This is just too much.
Rub-a-dub-dub. Looking great today, Esplin. Oh, sharpening that sword. Great job. Wow, it makes me so happy. And I did feel bad. So, Chris, you've been in shows before. We've both been in shows before where you've been like a super featured extra. I know people who have been super featured extras before. And so they do the entire project. They're there every day and they're getting extra rates. And in this movie, so King Argatron, played by Ken Jeong, and his right hand man, David of Glencraken, played by Matt Walsh, who's awesome in Veep. They're the kings of this whole LARPing community that they have, this live action role playing. But with them, they actually have all their names too. Here, let me find their names. So they have these extras that are with them at all times. In the commentary, David Wayne says, I probably should have given them a line. Like, we had a budget for it.
Yeah, and he says he felt bad about that. But no, you were saying?
They had Captain Ron, Foo Fighter, Prince Emo, and then it was Argatron and Davith of Glencraken. They were the Fearsome Five. But those three guys' names were Captain Ron, Foo Fighter, and Prince Emo. And they feed him at the burger hole. Oh, that was really funny. It was the burger hole, right?
It was originally supposed to be the burger and brownie hole, but the prop department thought that he was making that up.
And he got so mad. That makes me so happy.
But I like how in the extended version, in the extended scenes, you see that Ken Jeong, he's kind of a jerk to the waitress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I didn't like that because it didn't seem very fitting for his character, because whenever she brings up the coffee, he says, how many years have I been coming here? You know that it's decaf, you wench. And in the version that we see, I really like how he's giving it to Danny. And he's like, huh, you think that Augie is going to be welcomed back into our community. And then the waitress comes by and she goes, he's like, oh, decaf, please. Thank you.
Yeah, that was the best. That was the funniest. Yeah, I didn't like, he's like, I have an anger problem. I didn't like him doing that. And I liked it when Davith was trying to sell insurance and he just became a nice guy towards the end of it. Oh, this is fun. Yeah, come back next year.
Are you a renter or a buyer? Because I can help you out with either one.
Oh, that was funny. That's what kind of made it for me. And you know what else makes me really laugh is these battle scenes were played by the stunt coordinator in this was Paul Amata. I think his name, Jeff Amata.
I wrote out a good bit of stuff. I really think that he should get a massive credit on this one.
Because he's done Furious 7, the Total Recall remake, Iron Man 2, Tropic Thunder, Bourne Ultimatum, Daredevil, Little Nicky, Fight Club, Blade, Escape from L.A., Mortal Kombat, They Live, Big Trouble in Little China. He's done stunts or fight choreography or stunt choreography on all these films. And He did the stunt coordinating for this movie, and it looks fun, these battles. I like these battles a lot.
I mean, he started off on Blade Runner.
Wow.
And he went on to do Missing in Action 2, Rambo First Blood Part 2, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, House. We said Big Trouble in Little China, which he actually played 20 different characters in that movie alone. He also did Lethal Weapon, and he was the one who created the epic fight scene from They Live.
Wow. And the Bourne fight, the Krav Maga fight in Bourne,
which is insane. He was a close personal friend of Brandon Lee's, and he was also his stunt advisor, and he has 197 credits to his name as of this recording. But also the Lair advisor, which Lair is supposed to be a takeoff of LARPing, which is live action role play. But the Lair advisor was Adrian Grady, who is a real LARP. Wow. So she wanted to make this as realistic as possible, which really does add to it. So if you have a stunt coordinator who is, I mean, beyond phenomenal at what he does, and you have somebody who is a real hardcore LARPer working hand in hand just for these scenes, that's the reason why they look so fantastic. And I love how each one of the Lair people, they look all unique, and you have so many people that put dedication into this. They're not just regular extras that are playing characters in a big crowd shot. These are people who actually do this, and they put a lot of heart and a lot of soul into it, which makes it even more fun for the viewer.
Well, absolutely. And I really enjoyed the fights a lot. And I like that David Wayne, initially, I know the script and what he wanted to do was just make fun of it, Lara and LARPing. But then he got to meet everybody, and then he got to spend time there, and he loved it. He just had a great time being there, and that made me happy.
In the commentary, he said at first he thought that he was just going to be kind of like making fun of these guys and like, ha, ha, ha. But then he was like, this is pretty cool. So he wanted to put in that scene where Danny is overdoing it. And then Davith of Kraken was like, whoa, hey, whoa, relax. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I was just getting into it. He's like, yeah, I know. It's fun, isn't it? Why don't you give me your email? You'll come. We can train for next year. But the Lair stands for Live Action Interactive Role Playing Explorer. So because they didn't want anyone to like directly think that they were mocking LARPing.
And I don't think they were. I think they're pretty kind to it. I know in the beginning he's being a brat, but I think in the end everyone sort of digs it and has fun with it.
It is fun. I mean, I myself am not a LARPer, but I do go to the Renaissance festivals, and I think it's just really neat that you see these people that dedicate so much to these characters and their roles. And some of these people get so much into it that they will talk like the people that talk of the time that they are supposed to be representing, and they'll do references to things. And I think it's really cool.
If you invited me, you're like, Mark, I got an opening. We got this LARPing thing this weekend. I'm part of Beans and Coffeeopia. We need to battle. And I got you. Like, what kind of weapon do you want? I have all these fake things. Come help me out in this battle. I'd be there in an instant.
Oh, man. I would expect you to be bringing the chili.
I got to bring the crock pot. Well, I'll bring a Jenny and a crock pot. But it looks like fun. And when they showed up as Kissanthia, that just made me so happy watching them go into battle and just sort of love it. And there's a scene where Davith of Glen Kraken, I love that name, wipes out about five people with his, because he's a brick shit house. And I don't know what a brick shit house is, but I like what David Wayne said there.
Yeah.
But I like that. He wiped out pretty good people with nice choreography. They learned that, and it wasn't an insult. These guys were actually really good at it. Well, you know what? I think that's what makes it better, is it wasn't a bunch of dummies swinging swords at each other making fun of them. These guys knew actual techniques, and they knew actual battles. So I think that made it more likable that they weren't making fun of that material.
And Ken Jeong, he spent literally hours every day talking with Adrian about how he should act and how he should behave, even when he's in and out of his character of in the lair realm. And he really wanted this to be as believable as possible. I believe that David Wayne said that he prepped for this like how a classically trained actor would prepare for a Shakespeare play.
That's fun. And
he really put in a lot of effort for literally weeks and months. And he spoke to Adrian every day for a couple hours saying like, how would my mannerisms be? How would I talk? If I was the king, how would I behave? Would I do this? Would I do that? And she said, you know, you would do your movements. And she said about how he would have his jewelry and how he would speak to people. And he just ate it up. He loved it so much.
Wow. And it shows on screen. They had a lot of fun. And I think this is why the movie has a fresh tomato meter rating. I mean, critics like this movie, audiences like the movie. I mean, it made $93 million worldwide. That's not that's a pretty good box office total right there for a movie called Role Models that's rated R. So,
I mean, adjusted for inflation, that is $110.2 million.
I mean, that's good. That's good for a comedy with a budget of $30 million.
I would say that goes above and beyond. To add to that, to what you said, in Brazil, this movie is known as Do What I Say, Don't Do What I Do.
That's funny. Wow.
Which is kind of goes along with the movie.
I wish it was Don't BS a BSer.
That would be, maybe that is in more literal translation. I don't know.
Oh, I love it. All right, hey, so how about this? Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will talk more Role Models. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And okay, we got to talk about this. Little Bobby and Sean William Scott Wheeler just talking about boobies. I mean, that's probably a third of this movie. And I like how, you know, he's like, you can't just look at them. You notice those mountains look like boobs. Look over there, 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock. And then later on, Wheeler's talking to his friends. And his friend's like, do you have STDs? Are you going to die alone because your lifestyle?
I love how he says, he's like, you know, you could have, he names all these STDs. He's like, and crabs. And he's like, I don't have crabs. And he's like, what are you telling these kids? That you have crabs.
I like how they build up his lifestyle like that, but then they just sort of have kids say that to him, and you're like, wait a second, is this guy isn't cool?
Yeah, I would say that he's probably not the ideal person that you want to look up to.
Yeah, exactly.
Hence the name of the movie.
Role Model. Get it?
Role Models. Tagline, we are not role models.
Well, technically they're not role models, but the title's funny because it's assuming that they're role models. And I also liked how, so in every movie, there's always the breakup. So in the beginning of the film, you have Elizabeth Banks and Paul Rudd breaking up, but then they get with these kids and then they start bonding with the kids. They have a montage. They go to the beach and Wheeler gets a sand boobies. They sort of start hanging out and becoming buds. But then I kind of liked the way the breakups happened between the kids. And it's a lack of a better term as I'm using this. So you have Wheeler, he goes to a party, meets up with a girl, and he leaves his buddy playing video games. That's not, okay, no man in their 30s should ever should do that, right? You should never, ever, ever, ever do that. But I guess David Wayne wanted it to be bad, but something that's not inexcusable. If that makes sense. Like, listen, that was stupid. I thought you were there. I kind of like that Wayne did that. And then I like that what happened between Rudd and Augie is Rudd finally stuck up for Augie at the dinner that he hates going to dinner with people scene. And I kind of dug that. But I mean, it was a believable way to break up the kids, I think. And it was a good way to bring them all back together.
Yeah, I like how in the beginning we established a very good friendship with everybody and how everyone is kind of, we're still kind of working on things and they have a great camaraderie. And then they do things that are not excusable, as you said, with the party sequence, Danny sticking up for Augie, and it really backfires against him, even though it really shouldn't. And I like how whenever he gets up and then, Ken Marino's character playing the dad there just takes his chair and pushes it over.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That made me happy.
I thought that was good because I was like, I remember when I first saw this, I thought, oh yeah, that's what you would do at a bar. You would just kind of
and people love that scene too, that he did that.
Yeah, it's good. It's a solid.
Ken Marino's fun. I love him in Wanderlust. So David Wayne Before this, he did Wet Hot American Summer, The Ten, then he did this. And there's a scene in Wanderlust where Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston are at Ken Marino's home, and they're just being turds. Well, they're all being brats to each other. Ken Marino just starts slamming his table, like his plate down, and like he starts walking around like he's hulking up. He's like, in my house. Have you seen that scene where he just starts freaking out?
It's been a while since I've seen it.
Oh, but he starts hulking out, and it's just one of the funniest scenes. But I think I like his, well, no, I don't know if I like his character in this, but he's not like a terrible guy. Is he? No, he's a terrible guy.
I don't know how to put it. He's immature for his age.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I think that he gets away with it for so long, so he's okay with behaving immaturely. And I think that if Augie's mom left him, no, not even that, because I don't even think he cares about Augie's mom. But I think that if he had a rude awakening, he would probably snap out of it. But his character is good with acting like this for his whole entire life until something bad happens.
Yeah, I gotcha. And then he's just kind of living with, what, Are you drinking coffee right now, Chris Kelly?
Carrie Kenny. I was drinking coffee. Put down that chili and get in there.
No, I left you hanging there. You're like, man, I'm safe to do some coffee right here. And then, listen,
Carrie Kenny playing playing Lynette.
I think she's funny in this role, too. And I do, like I said, I love the ending when she tries, but it works out horribly, but he appreciates that she tries. That scene always makes me laugh. I dig that about them.
Because it's not like they're going to come fully around just from one little scene and seeing that how their son is really into this. What I thought was cool was with Kiss My Anthea, they were going to put on the full kabuki makeup for Kiss.
Yeah.
But they said in the commentary, David Wayne said that they did that. And with the screen tests, they just looked really creepy.
Yeah, I can't even tell who they are. They probably wanted to keep some of their...
There's no way you'd be able... I mean, they would just kind of blend in together and they wouldn't... It would just look weird, in my opinion.
I kind of hate, though, that Bobby or Ronnie gets taken out so early. Probably with his age, they probably didn't want him on set. I mean, the less...
Yeah.
Just a lot of kid hours and tutors and stuff. But I would have liked to see him running amok with that sword whapping people.
I think that would have been fun. But I think exactly what you said, that after looking at things, they thought it would be a lot smarter just to, you know, kill him off and right at the beginning. And then that way they could have more time and breathing room and they could use more swear words and whatnot, which apparently was a huge issue while filming this movie, where they had to be very careful about how many times a day that they could say the F word around little Bobby and how many times and how he could actually say the F word, because there's a vast difference between using it as a noun and using it as an adjective. So it was just kind of according to David Wayne, it was a big problem because the child labor personnel were always there saying, like, Bobby can't say it like this. He can say the F word like this, though. And he's like, God dang. Like,
yeah. And also they had to film scenes where Sean William Scott was swearing on different times because you can't have him swearing to it's interesting laws, isn't it? It's really
I don't think the general public, well, you're not supposed to think about it, but you're just supposed to enjoy the movie. But I think the general public doesn't realize all these different things are put into a movie, and it really does make it a lot more harder. A prime example of making it hard in a movie to using a kid in a movie. Well, one of my all-time favorite horror films, The Babadook, that kid that's in that, he was being told that what they are filming was a comedy. So that's the reason why it explains his outrageous behavior, because in his mind, he was doing a funny thing the whole time. So all the scenes that involve him doing stuff, that's why they're like that. And then the scenes that are involving the mother talking to him, the boy was not on set at all. And they had to get around that just because of children.
I love it. I have a quick question for you, Chris Kelly. What do you think about Coca-Cola and chicken fingers?
I mean, that's a pretty good snack, to be honest with you. I personally am not big on Coca-Cola, but, you know, hey.
I just love when Augie says, I like the idea of Coca-Cola more than I like it. And then he goes, I would run a train on some chicken fingers right now. And they're all just looking at him like, what? Now, bagel dogs, yes or no? I know.
Bagel dogs.
I know you're vegan, but what's your idea on bagel? Would you do a tofu bagel dog?
Yeah, I would do that. I have vegan corn dogs in my freezer right now. It's a lot of bread, but I think it's kind of funny that Ken Marino was actually the one who came up with that idea of having the dog coming out and then pushing it back in.
She just starts laughing about it.
Oh, my gosh. I love Jane Lynch in this movie. I think that her character, her introduction, you know, as being a drug addict, that was all her that came up with that idea, which I thought was fantastic. And she's the one who came up with all those lines of dialogue. Clearly that she did a lot of cocaine back in the day, but no longer does it. And it's just, it's so funny. And her introduction with that video for, what's the name of it again? What Wings?
Sturdy Wings. Oh, where the kids are dancing.
And then she's dancing, coming out behind the TV. I lose it every time she does that. Just so darn funny. And just watching.
You're trying to BS a BSer? Wait, so how are we trying to BS you? And why'd you put that in quotation marks? I love their little quips back and forth. Oh, see, you BS a BSer at the end when she says that.
Yeah.
I like her character, though, because I've never really seen a character like that on screen. You could have played her as a... You know, you have the one guy who... The really nerdy guy who could get dimes to play a game of Donkey Kong, and he likes to play Wings. That isn't even a song. You could have that over...
I was going to say, that's not even a Wings song, yeah.
Oh, man, and you could have the overly pious, the really strict, but she's just a been-there-done-that lady. And I like her, though. I love that character, and all their interactions make me so happy. And and she just kind of gives it right back to him, and even when they're being sarcastic with her, she just keeps going. She's like, I do not care about you guys. Oh, it made me so happy.
I love how she says to them, she's like, hey guys, I just want to put this out there. I know why you're here. You're gonna be serving 30 days in jail unless you do this. So
yeah, don't BS a BSer.
And it's so funny because it's like, look, I'm aware of why you're here. And it's hilarious. I originally they were supposed to use the real Big Brothers organization, but when the Big Brothers organization read this script, they said
I used to do that. I used to work for Big Brothers, Big Sisters when I was teaching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did that. I did it for like 3 years. It was fun, wow. Man. Yeah, a couple times a week, you go work with a kid, help them out with their homework, because or whatever circumstances. So I dug doing that. That was fun. And I'm going to brag here, Chris. They had to lay off a bunch of people, and they're like, we're going to keep you because you're an asset. I played Wings to all the kids.
That's Hoffmeyer putting the ASS in asset.
bragging about helping children. What a schmuck. That guy just
tons
bragged.
Of chili.
Yeah. Well, I did. I would bring the crock pot over. No.
Only crashed one truck into the front of it. It's just.
Would you work at Chipmunks?
No.
I love that idea. They couldn't do They couldn't do Chuck E. Cheese's, so they did Chipmunks, where there's monks, chipmunks who are monks. I love that Sean William Scott started working there. I'm glad they ditched that sub. That subplot would have taken up too much screen time, but I love the
there
scene.
Was a lot.
Oh, sorry, go for it.
No, I was going to say, there was a lot of stuff that they actually wound up cutting out, that a lot of the women that Sean William Scott's character, Wheeler, winds up schmoozing, they all had more roles, or there was more of a significance to these characters than what we actually see. Like, originally it was supposed to open up with an alarm clock going off, and Sean William Scott being like, ugh, and then he sees the girl next to him, and she's like, you don't have any electricity, and he says, oh, I'm just doing my part to save the environment. She's like, you don't have any water either. He's like, again, environment. And then he's like, you want some breakfast? She's like, sure. What do you have? Nothing. And then she's like, okay, well, I'm leaving. And she goes to put on her clothes and leave and goes, ooh, can you give me a ride somewhere? And then that's what was, that led into what we actually have is a real beginning, which is Paul Rudd looking at his watch and then Sean William Scott being dropped off by a beautiful woman.
I mean, all the cuts make sense, though. Watching, so I had, do you feel the same way? Watching the deleted scenes are funny, but I think the movie's right about where it should be.
Yeah, I always say this, there's a reason why they're deleted. Unless you're really trying to push the envelope for a big movie, such as like trying to explore more, like for instance, with a movie like Giant or East of Eden, you know, a lot of those deleted scenes you could probably put back in, but... With movies like Role Models, yeah, I mean, the whole point of the movie is, let's just face it, it's a goofy movie, fun. We don't need a lot of depth.
I do wish that. So, and there's an additional subplot where they get fired from their Minotaur job, so Sean William Scott has to start working at Chipmunks. And I wish there was more of him and Rashida Jones. That scene between them where he's talking about, oh, man, I had this kid. I want to go mentor him again. I can't. And he's like, you know all about needing a mentor. She's like, what? He's like, I'm sure you have dad issues. She's like, I talk to my dad every day. Like, that was a weird, scene. She's like, I'm not smoking anymore. Do you want to make out? It was a, and then he was like, I quit this job. I'm out of here. Then she just starts smoking a cigarette. I wish that they would have kept that in because I thought that was a funny, I don't know. That was just so weird. That's such a weird
it
scene.
It added to the movie. That would have been one to leave in. One scene that I'm glad that they changed was whenever they got fired, they were originally supposed to duke it out, like right there, really beat the crap out of each other. And Wheeler and Danny, it was supposed to end with Wheeler punching Danny right in the face and really like hitting him hard. And David Wayne said during test audiences, they lost the audience at that point because everyone was going, wow, why is this brutal fight scene in this movie? But they changed it to whenever they get into the elevator, they say some crude remarks. That lady with the kid kind of goes to the side, and then they do kind of like a goofy fight, yeah, back goofy and forth.
Wrestle.
And that makes it a little bit more funnier because then it shows that they still have heart. But to add like a really brutal fight scene in the middle of that, just, I don't know. I'm glad that they changed that.
And also, I think didn't it sound so? Sean William Scott's a much bigger, like more muscular dude than Paul Rudd was. So just having the having the big Sean William Scott just womp on Paul Rudd.
It's on par with if you had a scene where it's like, say for instance, Jack Nicholson fighting The Rock.
Yeah.
Just like it would be like, come on now, why would you do that?
The cheeky wrestling is much better because they're not punching each other. They're kind of having a brother wrestle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And these two guys care about each other too.
I mean, like, so I remember in the bin, they reshot that party scene too, where Elizabeth Banks wants to sing karaoke, Paul Rudd doesn't. And you bring in Yorma Taccone as one of the extras. I thought that was pretty funny from Lonely Island. He's like, oh, we're best friends. Like, we're going to live the rest of our lives together. Sean Williams, it's a very much a one-way friendship. So, I don't know, Wheeler's got to realize that, right?
Yeah, and I think he does after Beth leaves him, is that he realizes that his life really isn't going anywhere. And although to him, it's an okay cushion for right now, with Beth, she's thinking more about the future, that you're 35. Looking back on it, what really are you going towards? What is your goal? And if his goal is, well, I'm doing Minotaur is not an end. So she's telling him to grow up, basically. And if it comes to, I mean, it's almost like a sealing the deal moment whenever he doesn't realize that Venti is actually 20. So it's like, how do you not know that?
Yeah, he's just giving up at that point. That's a good scene, though. I don't know why, but that scene has always stuck with me. I think because I like coffee, and I also like it when jerks get called out. So like most of the internet, they just make a comment. You're like, no, man, that's not right.
Yeah, it really does. It adds another layer to it because I think everybody at a point was thinking, why do they call it Venti? Why don't they just call it, you know, small or medium? Why do we have to go through all these different words? And it's like, oh, that's the reason why. It makes complete practical sense.
Now, Chris Kelly, the Movies, Films, and Flicks crew, all the people in Movies, Films, and Flicks, we start a layer group based on all of the episodes that we've covered. So, I mean, we're almost at 300. We might be over 300 when this is released. What do you think would be our theme in a layer match? So Movies, Films, and Flicks, what would be our theme? I'll let you pick
sharks.
It.
Sharks.
Sharks. Ooh.
Sharks. Without a doubt. That's my money on sharks. I'm a big fan of shark movies, and I'm a big fan of the Movies, Films, and Flicks shark movies as well. Because I think one of my personal favorite episodes was whenever you did a commentary for Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, gosh. And it's so ugly. It was so bad. Oh, man. I was flop sweating during that one.
Oh, it's so much fun.
You just got to take I took myself out of my comfort zone and just did it. And that's how you got to do it, man. So what would be the sharks from, let's say, what would be the sharks from Any Given Sunday? Because there's that football. What would be the sharks from West Side Story? Would we, would we dress like Quint? What would our shark theme be?
I think you would have various different people from various different shark films. Like, again, obviously you would have Quint's character. You would have somebody from 47 Meters Down. I'd say you would have definitely probably someone dressed as LL Cool J's character from Deep Blue Sea. Somebody missing an arm.
This sounds amazing. From Shark Night?
From Shark Night. I was also going with Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, yeah. Jim Whitlock.
We'll do Shark Night. We'll do that, too.
There's a lot of arms getting lost in these movies.
That's always growing up, I thought that losing an arm to a shark was a lot more of a threat than what it was whenever, now that I'm an adult.
It happens so much.
It really, like quicksand.
Could we
ride? Every movie had quicksand.
Could we ride a banana boat in the battle?
That doesn't make a lot of logical sense as far as sharks go, but I'll let it happen.
Jaws Revenge.
They have a banana boat?
Yeah, remember the shark goes to kill the daughter, but it misses and it wipes out that lady on the banana boat instead? Because the shark is tracking the family down, and the shark has bad aim, and the poor lady gets chomped on a banana boat.
Oh, no. You know, it's been so long since I've seen Jaws of Revenge. I smell a new episode coming up.
I'm in. Shoot. Well, we're going to do the American Pie franchise, right? Then we can jump into Jaws.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh, yes.
The first Jaws is too good, so we shouldn't talk about that. We can maybe do 3 and 4.
It's been done to death, too. I mean, that's always a point that I like to stress with people is like, you know, I've always been asked, well, let's do an episode on the Lord of the Rings. And it's like, man, those have been done to death. If you don't know those movies by now, I mean, go rent and go to Videodrome, pick out a couple.
I know you have tons of not any other thing that you have about role models. Any more data you got for me? Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
As we said, the movie was very well liked. Generally, audiences and people, IMDb gets a 6.8. The Metascore is 61, which is great.
Yeah, I know. It's all so basically above the board. It's all over six.
Oh, yeah. Rotten Tomatoes, it's certified fresh, coming in at 77%. The audience has it at 74%. The director, David Wayne, he has a long history of comedy. He comes from a long line of his background comes from working with The State, which if you don't remember what The State is, that was more of an early 90s to late 2000s TV sketch show, which basically what they called themselves was it was like Saturday Night Live, but with more elaborate production. And yep. They would do various different skits. And that's literally where all of this began with David Wayne. He was a student at NYU. And then after graduating, he thought, you know what? I want to take the party past college. And he basically took all of his buddies that he met while he was at The State in college, including Michael Ian Black, Carrie Kinney, and Joe Lotrullio, Thomas Lennon, and made a show with various other folks called The State. And they did this for, I mean, almost 20 years, if you want to look at it like that. While he was doing that, he also created Wet Hot American Summer, worked for Mad TV, and then went on to do Children's Hospital, all with all of his friends that he had met while he was in college. So he really just kind of took everything that he had done and loved while he was in his teens to 20s and just moved it on into his adult, I think it's kind of cool. This movie had about like 5 different writers on it. A lot of the different characters, the people who were involved with that, they encouraged the improv. So that's the reason why you got more writers on this. Ken Marino, for instance, he was considered the on-set writer. So a lot of the times when they would come up with a different line, Ken Marino was the one saying, okay, now try it like this. Okay, now try it like that. Try it like this. So that's the reason why he got the writing credit. You may remember Ken Marino more famously from a lot of his day playing roles. He was in supporting in just about everything.
Veronica Mars.
He was in a ton of stuff. I remember him specifically from The Babysitter, and he is currently doing The Babysitter 2.
Oh, man. So, I love that movie.
Oh, it's such a great film too, and it's exactly what you would expect it to be, which was so refreshing whenever you're like, I really hope this movie is like this, and then it is. I love it. It's either that or it turns it on its head and it gives me something better than what I was expecting.
It captures its tone, you know, its tone almost immediately. And I think that's really hard to do. But it's one of those movies that you're almost immediately on its wavelength. And I kind of dig that about it.
And I'm always a big fan of movies that explore things that you aren't really expecting, especially with Babysitter. Satanism. How the crap did we come up with that?
Really like, bloody Satanism.
It's so ridiculous because you're like, wait, what the hell?
And Samara Weaving, she's really good in that.
Yeah. Everybody's dynamite in that movie. Mm-hmm. The producers, just a couple of them to say, just to give a little bit of credibility to, Andrew Z. Davis, who was one of the main producers on this. He mainly had a background in action movies, which is the reason why we have such great action scenes in this movie. Not only did it fall greatly on the stunt coordinator, but the producer as well did movies such as House 2, Volcano, Enemy of the State, Rush Hour 2 and 3, then went on to do this movie, then did Repo Men, In Time. And what I found was most interesting was his very first thing that he had ever done in film was he was a locations manager on Girls Just Want to Have Fun, that dance comedy from 1985 starring Sarah Jessica.
Wow. So,
that is some seriously cool stuff. The other producer on this, Dan Kulsrud, it was the first AD on Xanadu, Top Gun, Howard the Duck, The Goonies, and Spaceballs before he eventually moved into producing.
Wow.
Mary Parent, who was another producer, most famously in recent times, has an Oscar nomination for The Revenant. And she, before doing this movie, she did Pleasantville, and which we all can say that we love that film. That movie just has so many different things going on in it. It's just a beautiful film in itself. She then went on to do the 2014 Godzilla, Kong Skull Island. She's currently doing Godzilla King of the Monsters. Oh, sorry. She did Godzilla King of the Monsters, currently doing Kong versus Godzilla, the long-awaited, very supposedly a little bit closer to the original source version of Dune.
Oh, man, with Denis Villeneuve.
And, who's the other guy Jason Momoa, I believe, right?
Yeah, Villeneuve's directing, and it has the kid from, Call Me By Your Name? Oh, man, and Little Women.
That's going to be a dynamite movie. I wasn't a big fan of Dune, mainly because I just didn't get it. I also saw it whenever I was in my 20s. I did grow up with people who were massive fans of Dune, and one of my friends I work with frequently is a huge fan of Dune, so much so he does his own fan drawings of it. So he told me that this one is probably going to be the one to watch. The cinematographer, also Russ T. Alsobrook, big into comedy as well, starting out way back in the day, but some of his credits include the sequel to Encino Man, Encino Woman, and then after doing that, he teamed up with the Judd Apatow people with Freaks and Geeks. Then he went on to do Undeclared. He did Superbad, this movie, and then went on to do Paul Blart and Blockers, which if you haven't seen those movies, I strongly recommend checking them out.
Well, they're all hits. Paul Blart was a hit. Blockers was a surprise hit. Forgetting Sarah Marshall was a hit. Superbad was a hit. I mean, these movies, I think, Chris, I forgot to bring this up to you, man. Sorry to interrupt. He knows how to film comedy. He knows how to get both eyes in a joke. He knows how to frame the joke to where, I'm not going to say any, with this comedy, he's not trying to go for a Roger Deakins-esque look. He just wants to capture both eyes and capture the joke. And mm-hmm. I think his track record in comedy is really solid because he understands the joke first. And I think he nails that.
Yes. And I think that's what you need on a movie like this, is that you need to have a cinematographer that understands that no one's watching this movie for its wonderful shots. Although there are some cool shots in this, especially when he's capturing the lair fighting scenes. No one's watching it for the sunrise scenes. No one's going to be looking for the artistic value. They're here to have a good time, and they're here to have a good laugh. So you need to have somebody who understands that. And in my opinion, he does. I mean, Russ definitely understands that comedy is the thing that's selling this movie, and that you can see with his track record, especially with Superbad and moving on forward. Blockers, I thought, was a great film, and I don't really remember too many people talking about it that much. And I thought that it was just a great idea. John Cena playing like the suburban dad. That's hilarious.
And they got him butt chugging.
I mean, you need to have a crowd that understands this, which is just so funny.
Mm-hmm.
No, some great.
Oh yeah. Oh, sorry. Go for it.
Oh, I was gonna say some great little hints in the movie. Augie originally was not supposed to have glasses because McLovin had glasses, and David said that he didn't want to have anybody associating McLovin to this character, so he wrote him without glasses. However, Christopher Mintz-Plasse never bought contacts, and production said that they weren't going to buy him contacts for this movie. So he said, all right, fine, he's got glasses now. After production was over, Christopher went out and got LASIK eye surgery. So when they went to go do reshoots, they had to buy him a brand new pair of glasses that had the frames in them without prescription. So he said, it would have been cheaper just to buy the contacts.
Yeah, that's funny. Wow. It's amazing what people won't pay for on movies. There is this weird line where, okay, we need this and it costs this. Okay, but we also need some rubber bands. No. Wait, what? We need an espresso machine. Yes. We need glasses. No. It's an interesting thing that they don't want to spend money on some of these sets.
It really is. It's like it costs a dollar extra to buy chilled water, but it costs $3 to buy the bag of ice. So you buy the chilled water as opposed to the ice, but the water's going to get warmer faster without the ice. It just makes no sense. It's like, wait, what?
Oh, man. Or just get your... Haven't some productions recently tried to give their staff water bottles and then fill up, as opposed to wasting all the plastic?
They have, and I'm actually a big supporter of that, to be honest with you. I like that because they're just coming from somebody who's works in production, and I've worked locations. Nothing makes you more angry than seeing all these water bottles sitting everywhere, and somebody literally just opened it up, took a drink, put it down, and then they get called to go do something, which that happens all the time where you really have to put your stuff down, and then you'll always see like food or you'll see water bottles, but you'll see that and then you'll usually wait for about 1 or 2 hours and then come back to it and it's still sitting there and you're like, dang it, that guy didn't, or that person never came back to get that water bottle. And you're like, ugh, so that's a wasted water bottle. It's a wasted thing of water. And if you want to look at it, if you buy a whole case of water, that's, $3 for a case of 24 from Walmart? That's money that's wasting right there. And if you think about it collectively, you're wasting sometimes $20, $30, $40 just on this.
And plastic doesn't get recycled.
Exactly. And it doesn't. It gets thrown away. And you're like, this could have been used. You know what could have saved us a ton of money is if we bought these 5-gallon water jugs and then we had individual water bottles that we spent, $5 each on, and we could have just had people filling them up. And that would have saved tons of money because no one's going to just leave their water bottle lying around because it's theirs. And that's just how it works. But it just drives me nuts.
I'm with you, man. So much waste goes on these sets. They talk about, they want to portray this very liberal-esque thing, but then they're just wasting thousands of dollars of plastic and food and everything.
I really applaud the ones that do the water bottles and, utensils and everything that's made out of corn products. I really like that. And I think it's a lot better because that way, if things do get thrown to the side and you never pick it up, at least it's decompostable, which is great. And I like that.
Let's see. Do you have any more facts? Or are we moving on to the Chris Kelly recommendations?
Just a few more facts. I swear I'm almost done.
All right. No, it's fine. Keep going, man.
A cute little quote that I found, the director was, he says that with when he talks about Bobby Thompson's age and saying about how, oh gosh. So whenever Sean William Scott had to say, he's talking about Kiss and he's saying, yeah. And he's talking about his dick and how his dick is a gun. Of course, Bobby couldn't be on set for that. And he talks about movie magic. And, David says, making movies is a dream. Hollywood is a dream factory and I am the dream master. And he thinks about it for a second. He goes, I really don't even know what I'm saying.
Oh, that made me so happy. Yeah, that was funny. And I also like his little story about he actually took Ambien in a cab, him and a lady, and they started tripping.
Yeah, which I've never done that, but I can imagine that's probably what would happen.
That sounds horrible.
In the scene where Sean William Scott was nude, obviously no children were even on the set for that. But he said that in order for Sean William Scott to feel a little more comfortable, he said this as a joke. He said, I had the whole crew and myself being naked during the scene. And it was really distracting, especially for me, because my dong is so big.
Oh, man. Classic case of a guy laying on the ground.
Oh, gosh. Also, the critics, as we said, they were huge fans of this movie. They got the humor, which was even cooler. Peter, as we talked about, Roger Ebert, he gave this movie 3 stars. Peter Travers for Rolling Stone also gave this 3 stars. He said in his article saying that sometimes a shamelessly stupid, profoundly profane R-rated comedy is just all you want out of life. Role models more than fills that bill.
Yeah, it does. It was interesting in Ebert's review, though. He mixed up the characters. So he said that it was Paul Rudd who was giving Augie the boob lecture.
Well, I think at that point Ebert's career, he was also, through his thing.
Yeah, you're right. The first line is great, though. Like, funny people saying funny things in funny situations.
Not to point out where we're cheering, you understand, but to point out where we're thinking, hey, I sort of like that.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
What a great line.
And Claudia Puig for USA Today said, Role Models is a rare mainstream buddy comedy that definitely blends the endearing and the vulgar and interperses raucous comedy humor with subtle wit, which is very fitting for this movie.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, there's heart, there's wit, and then there's also vulgarity.
There's a lot, and it's also very warm and endearing. Who thought you could fit all of these into one movie?
No, it doesn't. And then the song at the end, geez, always, and the whispering eye.
Yeah, I love how we played. They played Detroit Rock City, and I mean, yet another movie involving Kiss, which was awesome. I loved how they put this in the movie because the director said, "Hey, look, I was a kid in the 70s. I loved Kiss. It was hard to meet somebody who didn't like, and everybody likes Kiss."
Kiss Anthea. And all the producers love Kiss, too, in this movie. So they're like, heck yeah, yeah, get rights to it.
And it's, and of course, Gene Simmons would sign off for it, because as we said in a previous podcast, Gene Simmons knows how to turn a buck, and he's the first one to tell you that.
Yeah. Make that money.
Oh, gosh.
He did a Comic-Con that I was at. He had a big line.
Oh, I'm sure of it. Yeah. I mean, he knows how to do it, man. And everybody's interested. And I'm telling you, whenever he sadly passes away, he is going to be leaving behind a massive underlying fortune.
I'll take it.
I'll settle on an autographed a record, to be honest.
Do it, Chris Kelly. Write him a letter.
Actually, I did shoot him an email. Didn't respond. I wasn't surprised. I assumed he probably would.
Nice.
Yeah, I got my recommendations now all ready to go.
Oh, man. All right. Chris Kelly, recommendations.
As I've said before, these recommendations, they are more of like a nice complimentary to this movie. So if you think of role models as being your main course, my recommendations would be more of like a side of mashed potatoes with gravy or a nice side salad to complement it.
Or bagel dog.
A bagel dog, if you will. It'll beans. Be the mustard on the bagel dog. It'll be the beans in your coffee. So my first recommendation... you know what? Before I do my recommendations, I do want to say that if you are interested in watching Role Models, please go out to Videodrome here in Atlanta. Go talk to my buddies over there. It's $5. They have the unrated version of it on DVD. They're more than happy to set it aside for you, and you can have it for a little while to check it out, check out all the bonus features for this movie.
It's worth buying, for sure. There's a lot on it. Or renting. Either way, it's definitely worth it.
Yes, yes. My first recommendation is the movie that put Danny McBride on the map, and that is, of course...
The Foot Fist Away.
Yes. Sorry. Available on Amazon Prime. If you haven't seen this movie, which from talking to folks, I found that a lot of people have never even heard of this movie, which I find shocking. It's such a fun movie. It's written and co-directed by Jody Hill, who is of the Eastbound and Down fame, which very much with Dana McBride. It's just hilarious. If you've never seen this movie, just do yourself a favor. Sit down, put on Amazon Prime, check it out. You won't regret it. Danny McBride is a Taekwondo instructor. How can you lose?
Oh, it's so good. And one more recommendation. If you haven't watched The Art of Self-Defense, that's another really mean karate-esque movie. So if you haven't watched that, check that out. That's a mean one right there. So that and The Flip This Way.
I haven't seen that.
Oh my gosh. It's brutal.
I've been told that it is a fantastic film, and I think that's on Hulu, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
Another recommendation to go along with this, also starring Sean William Scott, the Mr. Woodcock.
Yes, with Billy Bob.
Billy Bob Thornton playing the evil Mr. Woodcock, who is the gym teacher whenever Sean William Scott is in high school and has tormented him for many years. Turns out takes a liking to his mother, and they wind up getting engaged, I think, or married. I can't remember. But yes, I'm sorry. They do get engaged, and it petrifies him, and it is phenomenal. There's so many great scenes in this movie, so many great lines of dialogue. It's directed by Greg Gillespie. This was his first movie. He later went on to do Fright Night, which thank you for your recommendation, Mark Hoffmeyer. I do agree with you. It is a good movie. Also starring Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
So good.
It is. It's actually a really good movie. He later went on to do I, Tonya, which if anyone out there hasn't seen I, Tonya, it's a really good movie. And that was actually shot here in Georgia.
And Million Dollar Arm. I worked on that.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. And he's currently working on a movie with Cruella about Cruella de Vil, which I'm interested in watching because I think she's one of the greatest animated villains in Disney history.
She's terrifying.
She is. She's a puppy killer. That's her whole thing. And she just kills puppies.
And children go to the movies not expecting a horror movie, and they see it. Yeah. That's why she's so scary, because you aren't primed for it, and she just murders your soul.
Yeah. Ugh. That's all that I got for my recommendations. Oh, man.
And also the promotion with Sean William Scott and John C. Reilly. It's really funny as well. So they're both two employees trying to get a promotion, and it's just the two of them battling. It's a fun movie.
I haven't seen it. I'm going to have to check that out.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely worth a watch. But no, man, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of this movie. So thank you very much for saying to pull this one up next, man.
Oh, no, this was fun. And also, I know we said it before, and you're going to do an intro, real, whatever. But check out Classic American Movies. It's Chris Kelly's podcast. He and his girlfriend, Miriam, they talk about some really cool, like, you know what I like about this? You guys cover, like, The Way of the Gun. You do movies that most people don't really cover. And I think you guys got a smart, I like the way that you guys cover, just, I don't know, I like the movies you pick. I dig the vibe of it. So yeah, just listen to that. You can pretty much find it anywhere, right?
Yeah, it's available on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Stitcher, Podbean, anywhere you get your pods, it's on there. Trust me, just look up Classic American Movies. Just to add to what you said, the reason why we cover all different types of movies is that it started off as kind of like a joke with on Instagram, where every Saturday night I would show Miriam a different movie. As we've talked about before, my girlfriend is not from America. She's from Germany, and her knowledge of American cinema is not really as much. She doesn't really know that as many American movies as one would imagine. I would show her these movies, and I'd call them classic films. And the very first one that I showed her was Escape from New York. So that instantly was a big hit on Instagram, and everybody was like, "Oh my gosh, like, show her The Thing, or show her Demolition Man next," you know. And
over the top.
I'd show her Over the Top. Man, she liked that one a lot. That was a blast, because I mean, I'm telling you, we were watching that movie and she was just like, "Holy smokes, this movie's so ridiculous." But anyways, we decided to then move it as a podcast, becoming a pretty big hit. So I'm showing her these movies. She's educating herself on the movies, and she really likes doing the various different types of films, because she learns more, I learn more, and you know, it's just fun. And we've also moved on to doing other movies as well. We're starting to show movies that she loves and then I like as well. We just recently did Dirty Dancing, so that was a lot of fun to dig into the history of that. And also to go along with that is my interview series, which is Cult Classics with Chris. You can also, that goes along with Classic American Movies. So if you do follow Classic American Movies, you automatically are subscribing to the Cult Classics with Chris, where I interview those involved in making of cult classic films. My very first one was with Anne Carlisle, who was the co-writer and star of Liquid Sky. So those are a lot of fun. You get to learn about all the history of these movies, stuff that you would never hear or read about by just going online. And you can hear it directly from the person who did it. So it's pretty neat.
Chris Kelly's crushing it.
Yeah, I'll be able to afford my own cup of coffee.
So. And beans, brother. All right, well, thank you for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, so this was fun. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, for Chris, Coffee and Beans Kelly, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.